Hi, I'm Suzette Harris, and this is Charlene White. We're actually going to be co-presenting because we are talking about bridging the divide and integrating obesity and tobacco advocacy to multiply impact to low-income communities. We work at the Jefferson County Department of Health in Birmingham, Alabama. Charlene still works there. I've moved to Dallas. And I think I don't have a disclosure slide, but I do want to thank the CDC and funding the initiative that we're going to talk about through the Communities Putting Prevention to Work opportunity. Just a little bit about a little bit of background on our community. We were only one of seven communities dual funded for CPPW for both tobacco prevention and obesity prevention, and we're not New York City or LA. We're Birmingham. We like to say that it wasn't just because of the desperate need. It was also because of the great partnership and work that we had going on in Alabama. But Alabama is the second most obese state, third unhealthiest, and has the eighth highest cigarette use. Jefferson County has a population of about 650,000. You can see here that we're about half of our population is white, 42% black, and 4% Latino. One of the biggest struggles that we have is, in many of your counties, I'm sure you understand this, is working for policy change across 35 cities and 12 school districts. We're very fortunate. The Health Department formed the Health Action Partnership in about 2007 after completing a MAP assessment process and a community health improvement plan. The mission of the partnership is to collaborate to make Jefferson County a healthier place to live, work, and play. We do that through collaborating with multi-sector partners. And we were fortunate to develop a very strong action plan with 20 goals, everything from really improving access to mental health, to access to care services, decreasing tobacco, and decreasing obesity. And our focus over the last few years, particularly through this grant funding from CDC, has been to improve the built environment and access to healthy foods, as well as eliminate exposure to secondhand smoke. The photos up on the screen there, one is in a bar, clearly, that has banned smoking. One is of sidewalks. And kind of the lovely built environment there that would increase walkability. And then the last one has actually been through a Robert Wood Johnson funding. It's a safe routes to school walking school bus. And I'm proud to say that on October 6th, on Walk to School Day, one of our elementary schools that has been really successful in our walking school buses had half of the elementary school get up very early and participate in that walking school bus. I think the crowds were a little bit too much for the staff that day, but big success of that program. So our strategy has really been to work across these funding streams, that a lot of times, particularly larger health departments, you have a Bureau of Tobacco Prevention, a Bureau of this, that, and the other. And so we had a smaller staff, and it was really quite natural because we were all in the Division of Community Health to work across the two grants. And actually, it was an accident. One day I was presenting and called it Tobesity funding, and that kind of stuck with us because we realized how important it was going to be that we weren't just being tobacco or obesity and working in our silos, but coming together. So never know where errors are going to end up working out. So we were fortunate. We had formed some really effective alliances going into the initiatives that we were working on. But we had to continue building those alliances. We had a lot of new partners coming to the table because all of a sudden we had $14 million to address tobacco and obesity over the course of 2 years. So there were people scrambling to work with us. We had lots of love. And so we worked to form those effective alliances and really make sure that we were doing that in a strategic way across both our obesity and tobacco work, and then also in determining priority cities, which I'll talk about in a bit. And then as we moved through the process, we really had to take a step back. We had to debrief a lot of different parts of our work plan, kind of reassessing resources and looking again at synergy in the work plans, and then avoid working independently and in silos, which I'll probably say silos 15 times. So, for example, priority cities and where we overlap. This is a more detailed map of Jefferson County in the top left no, top right for you, is cancer prevalence by zip code, and then the other one is heart disease. So really focusing on communities with greater health disparities, comparing chronic disease prevalence maps. That was a tactic that both teams used. So we, the tobacco team, sat down and said, okay, what of these 35 cities are going to be our priorities? And the team working on walkability and passing complete streets resolutions did the same thing. And then we came together and compared notes and said, okay, we've got about six cities that are really top priority for both of us, of our top 10. Let's make sure that we're being strategic about when we go into those cities. And then as we move through the process, again, combining community assessments, really looking at, are we matching our resources in X, Y, or Z city, and leveraging those resources and relationships and who you play golf with and whatever else. And, of course, we had a shared leadership team, and that made a big difference, that our project director and our leadership team, which was various community leaders, also helped us in making sure that we were collaborating across and leveraging the resources there. Another example was our media campaign, because we're Alabama and we have won a few national championships on that line of football in our colleges. We chose Champions for Health, and these are two different newspaper ads that we had. The one on the left is actually targeting childcare parents who send their kids to childcare centers. We were working on improving physical activity and nutrition in childcare centers through regulations. And the one on the right is a waitress in a restaurant saying she has the right to breathe clean air. So you can see a similar look. We were really trying to get the broader picture out there about being a champion for health in your community and driving people to the same website. But when you got to the website, feel free to go to it. It is still live. You'll be pulled into, maybe you've gone there to look about tobacco or look about obesity or increasing access to food, but then you're pulled into these other areas. And so really trying to use the mixed messaging there.
Thanks, Lisette. My name is Charlene White. I work for Jefferson County Department of Health, and I guess my biggest disclosure is here that I'm a mom of a 13-year-old, and English is not my first language, so please bear with me as I struggle with my presentation. So before I continue with my presentation, I want you to kind of listen to 2 minutes of a sample of our radio dramas so you can understand where I'm going. But I don't know. Wait. No, it's not. No, there it is. All right, close your eyes, please.
Listen to what the folks in Camberwell have been up to. Wait until you hear that.
Hey there, Renita. You're early today.
That's because I've been spending your chickens since I got to work.
Over all the cigarette smoke. You must have an almost specific sense of smell, girl.
As much as Papa Wild gives your restaurant on this radio show, I'd be careful what I say about his farm about you.
I pay for all that play. Maybe not for too much longer, though. Make a breast.
Two of each. Is business that good?
That bad. My customers keep complaining about the cigarette smoke from Bravo Bob's bar. If any more leave because of it, I'm not going to be able to keep buying ad space. Money's getting tighter and tighter. What did Mama move in with me?
I thought she was doing better. No, give me those corner pieces now.
And when is my chicken elbow been strong? Mama thinks she's doing a lot better than she is. Oprah, her cousin.
Oh, jumbo size portion.
Hey there, Daniel. I can try. Hi, Mama.
What's that on your shirt?
The folks are crying because somebody could do something on you. Got any hot cousins?
Fresh made. Now take them over there while you start your homework.
Just one game on Father Destiny first, okay?
No, not okay. Homework before Final Destiny.
Yes, ma'am.
I just hope I can get that stain out of his shirt. He's busting out of most of his clothes to begin with.
Daniel looks more and more like his daddy every day. His face is getting just as fat and full as Sean's ever was.
Ooh, last I heard, Sean's new wife had him on a diet.
Really? We'll see how long that marriage lasts in. Oh. That reminds me. Can I get a Diet Coke with that?
Daniel, could you get that please while I finish up Miss Wright's order?
Yes, ma'am. Your mom's kitchen.
All right, open up your eyes. Okay. I want to ask the audience, how many of you want to hear more? Oh, how many? Okay, most of us, right? And that's the beauty of this particular initiative, is that it's in a nice way, you don't attack anybody. It's a you know, easy way to filter into your community and address different issues. I also want to ask you, what are things that you notice from the themes that you think we're going to discuss? Somebody? Obesity? What else? Tobacco. Okay. Since we are trying to bridge that divide, one of our goals was, how do we make sure that we address health equity? How do we make sure that we go into the communities and to reach out with venues and opportunities that people have access to? And how do we make sure that we do something entertainment that people are going to feel engaged? We were very fortunate to have Media for Health and UAB do a collaborative effort and do these entertainment radio programs. We did two. One focused on the Latino population called Promesas y Traiciones, which is Promises and Betrayals. Thank you for the translation. And the African radio drama is called Living Well in Camberwell. And over the course of about 40 different episodes, it was easy to relate with the characters. There's an evolving story, but at the same time, we had the opportunity in the magazine hour to bring an expert on some issues and really focus on whether it's cessation, whether we're talking about school wellness policies, because in the end, the beauty of these social dramas, this is not something that we created, but it is really about how do we create policy change using these tools that are already out there, but really instead of focusing on programs and problems and events that are in the community, how do we change that needle to something that's going to impact the community at large? So with all our efforts, we were able to do a lot of cross-collaboration. A couple of the examples that I want to point out to you are these three. Our neighborhood association in Birmingham has 99 presidents. Each of them, and when I say each of them, was each of the 99 presidents, were focal, were a pivotal component to the success that we had in Birmingham. Birmingham is the biggest city in Jefferson County, and because we are Alabama, it's very conservative, really hard to pass any kind of smoke-free policy. But it was essential to work with the community to make sure that the message was driven by the community and not by the health department or by the American Lung Association. It was really driven by what the community wanted. We were very successful. In April, we adopted, well, not we, but Birmingham adopted comprehensive smoke-free policy. But what happens to that group after that whole momentum finished? We didn't want to just, you know, we're out, we did our work, because it didn't end there. We invited them to continue that effort through the Health Action Partnership. And as a matter of fact, our last meeting that we had about a month ago, we had an overwhelming amount of new members in the Health Action Partnership, and most of them were these neighborhood presidents that realized how important it was to get involved in the community and how important these policy changes are to move health in their community. So they shifted from tobacco. We did tobacco. They're helping in implementation of tobacco very clearly, but they're also now working on obesity. Freshwater Land Trust and Conservation Alabama are two agencies that historically have been working on issues of conservation. Obesity and tobacco were not their field of expertise, but the beauty of collaboration is thinking outside the box. And when we got awarded both tobacco and obesity, these two agencies were focused on the obesity side. Freshwater Land Trust was trying to create Greenway Master Plan that connects all the greenways throughout Jefferson County. But the interesting thing about this is that at every presentation that we made, there was a pitch. There was a 30-second elevator speech that addressed the Health Action Partnership as a whole. So yes, the audience may not all of it be involved with the Greenway Master Plan, but maybe one or two of the people that were there were going to be key people that could help us with the smoke-free policies. So as Wendy, one of the presenters, was trying to sell her idea, she at the same time used 30 seconds of her precious time to make sure that she brand the Health Action Partnership as a strategy overall for community health. Conservation Alabama was funded initially only through the obesity side, but it was in one of those aha moments when we realized that there was opportunity there for cross-collaboration. Because their expertise relied basically on working with doing political assessments and working on campaigns, it was very obvious that their skill sets that they were doing on obesity, trying to advance complete street resolutions, could also apply to smoke-free policies. So in the middle of our grant, we were able to provide some funding to Conservation Alabama to help us as we continue doing strategy on smoke-free policies. That actually was very successful. I'm not gonna lie, they were not the success of the grant. Everybody contributed. It was a piece of the puzzle, but I think it was a cornerstone on how we viewed policy change in the partnership and how we can successfully work together. Because of that, we have Birmingham is the biggest city in the county, but Bessemer probably is one of the greatest examples that we have because of the health disparities in that community. And with a population of about 28,000 people and a household average income of only 27,000 a year, most of that community has a burden on their shoulders. 71% of the people that live there are African Americans. So it was, as Suzette said, when we started our assessments, it was very obvious that Bessemer both needed some tactics to address obesity and to advance tobacco policies. And we were very successful. Today we can truly celebrate and embrace the partnership in this community. Bessemer was the first city to adopt school wellness policies that included policies within physical activity and nutrition while the bell is on within school and also after school, which is key to continuing that momentum after school. We also quickly realized that sometimes policies in paper are really good, but if they're not implemented, they're worth nothing. That was the case in Bessemer. Through this grant, we were able to provide implementation and help this school system to get what they had in writing, which was really good, but to actually make it a reality. We also work with the city to adopt a resolution around complete streets. And although, yes, it is just a resolution, it is a blueprint for the future. This will allow the elected officials to have to work with our built environment to make sure that we have better opportunities to increase physical activities. And because we were very successful in the community level, we had a great platform to write for grants, to compete, to be competitive in a grant. And we actually got awarded a grant to make sidewalks. So we started with a resolution, now we're in implementation because we've been successful. And that's because of all these different strategies that are coming together in one community that we embraced as a partnership. Smoke-free policies are very close to my heart because that's what I do for the most part. And as of probably 2 months ago, the city of Bessemer went completely smoke-free, which is humongous for us because in the long run, that's what we wanted. So this is a great example on how we were able to cross-collaborate. So what are a couple of examples of our recommendations? Please think outside the box. As you're thinking about your partnerships, some of the partners that come to the table may not be your typical agency that works in your issue, such as Conservation Alabama. If they would have told me 3 years ago, you need to fund Conservation Alabama, what you talking about? No, completely shifted 180 after living it and knowing that it works. Same thing with the YMCA, for example. You think YMCA is all about physical activity, but the connections that these people have in the community open doors for you. It could be as easy as educating their board of directors, and then their board of directors say, hey, I know somebody that can help you. So just making sure that when you're branding your message, you know who has power and who can help you as you move forward. The other strong recommendation is the use of an integration team. Why do I say this? Because sometimes we are so busy doing everything that we forget the big picture. And if we don't stop at some point and think about how do we connect A and B, nobody else is going to do it. It's very easy to get tangled in budgets or in how to, you know, in staff issues. But you have to have a team that is looking at the bigger picture. We were very lucky enough to have constant management team meetings because probably it was kind of easy. We worked in the same division. Sometimes you don't have those opportunities, but if you create some kind of system that's something that happens in a regular basis, it cannot happen once every 6 months. It has to be at least once every 2 weeks because things evolved. This is a living kind of process. You really need to make sure that you're engaging everybody all the time. Make sure that you develop emotionally charged campaigns. Data is good, but data is not going to put pressure on anybody. The key to building pressure is A, making stories that make a difference, that people can relate to. The mom that lost a part of her lung or suffers from emphysema is a lot better than the message of saying that 800 people die from secondhand smoke. If that elected official or the leader in your community cannot relate to you, they're looking at you, but they're probably not listening to what you're saying. Same thing with the radio dramas. I think that's a good example. We did that emotionally charged radio drama. There was somebody wanting to at some point kill somebody, and then there was a romance. And, you know, in the end, in between the lines, there was the health message, but people really could relate to what we were doing. Show your power, learn, show, and grow your power. So at the end of the day, if you build your relationships in your community, they're not only going to work for tobacco, they're going to work for obesity too. If you know your elected official very well, you know who their wife is or who their husband is, who their friends is, whether they went to church, those relationships don't change just because today you're talking about climate change and tomorrow you're talking about tobacco. They're there, and what you need to make sure is that you grow those relationships so when you need to ask, you can count on those relationships to be there. In the end, cross-collaboration is the perfect recipe for success. I truly believe from the bottom of my heart that it is the great prescription for health overall, because it's not about tobacco or obesity. It is about obesity. Thank you.